another week, another chat with a cat. We are back. This chat with a cat is coming to you. It's episode 4. This is following regular season sim number 5 of the 1980 NPBSL season. Last time we looked at the Eastern Conference and did a little bit of division previewing, or I guess division reaction more than preview. We're going to come back this time and we're going to hit the Western Conference and see what's going on over there. We will start in the Midwest, and as we did last time, we're going to start at the bottom and work our way up to the top. At the bottom of the Midwest Division is Utah. They're on a 13-game losing streak as of the present, and a lot of their team is just having problems doing really anything. They're currently sitting 22nd out of 23 teams in the league in scoring, and they're number 6 in terms of points given up. So in terms of margin overall, they're giving up more than 8 points a game, more than they're scoring, and that right there is probably the number one reason they're having issues. They're the second worst team in the league in terms of both assists and turnovers. They're second worst in terms of field goal percentage, points per shot. So everything is going wrong here. The offense isn't clicking, and they're not getting a lot of possessions on offense more than their opponents, and that probably explains why they have just been getting absolutely blasted and are on a 13-game slide. I feel kind of bad for Exist. I thought Utah had a chance to be good around Kiki Vandeweghe. They've really missed his production, but even now that he's coming back, I think they may be in too big of a hole to get out of. They haven't been able to slot him into a lineup. And even though I think they can turn it around, being 15 games under 500 halfway through the season, this is probably a season that Exist just has to chalk up to bad injury to your top player. It's going to be very difficult to win when you're missing 31 points a game from Kiki. And so I think this is one where I don't know that it's the team building so much as just an unfortunate injury. It's forced Mike Dunleavy into service. Paul Westfall has tried to lead the team, but if you look at their big men in the front court, they're starting Pat Cummings, who's averaging 11 points a game, Rich Kelly, who's averaging 6 points a game. So between them, you're getting roughly 18 points and 13 rebounds a game. Moses Malone has that on an off night, and he's only one player. So you can really see how the Jazz are just, they're struggling, and really what they're going to need to do in the offseason, a lot like the teams that are in the Eastern Conference that are struggling, they're going to have to focus on improving their front court. The good news for them is this draft is loaded with a lot of good front court players, so I think they have a good chance of being able to do that. But, what's the problem with the Jazz? Maybe they need to get a new trainer. I don't know. The good news for the Jazz is that Vandeweghe is 22, but most of the rest of their rotation is 26, 27, 30. So this is a team that I think is a candidate, maybe not this season, but definitely next season, to start breaking it up to build around Kiki. I agree with the trade article that says that it's all about getting players that fit around him. Next up are the Kansas City Kings. They're currently sitting at 12 and 22. They're not getting blown off the court as much as the Jazz are, but if you look at where they're struggling, where the Jazz were number two worst team in terms of points per shot, the Kings are the worst team in terms of points per shot. They're the worst in margins. Rebounding, they're 23rd. Rebounding margin, they're 23rd of 23 teams. And in terms of fouling, they're fouling their opponents, or their margin rather, is last in the league in terms of fouling. They're second to last in the league in terms of shooting. The things they do well are they do get steals and they do protect the ball. They don't commit a lot of turnovers. So I think there is something to be built around for the future, but they're going to have to improve on their offense. And as I look at their front court of Gaminski and Sikma, Gaminski is shooting just 46%, Sikma's shooting 48%, and that's contributing to the team's struggles offensively. They need some players that are a little more efficient in the front court. I think I mentioned in one of my earlier articles that I really liked Sikma. He has not performed as well as I would have hoped, but he's only 25. He's still got time, and he's still, I think, going to be an effective player if he gets the right pieces around him. I think the big disappointment for me has definitely been Brian Taylor. He's coming off the bench right now and averaging 11, and I think they just need a little more production from that backup wing spot, since they're not getting a ton of efficient play out of their big men. And Taylor, you know, he's shooting 48%. Their starting point guard, Alan Lavelle, 43%. Fred Brown is shooting 47%. ML Carr, their starting small forward, 40%. The only player on the team that shoots over 50% is backup power forward Lonnie Shelton. So I think that's probably the first order of business for the Kings, is trying to find some players that are a little more efficient. Also, if I'm them, I'm worried that Taylor and Brown, their wings, are not on the same timeline as Sikma and Lavelle, who I think are probably the two players they build around. Maybe Gminski, but I like Sikma's offense a lot better than I like Gminski's. I think Gminski is a good complementary piece. I don't think he's a, I don't know that he's a main leader on a team. The good news for them is they do have a couple of quality bigs. Where they really need help is on the wing. And there are a lot of good wings out there for trade. The problem is, to trade for one of them, you're going to have to offer up something that, you know, somebody else wants or needs. And that probably means a big man. So I think the quandary that is going to hit Superdog is, how does he pick up wing talent without giving up on his front court? And as I look at the draft, there's a lot of good wings at the very top of the draft board. You know, Rolando Blackman, Danny Ainge, Kelly Chipuka. But odds are good that these, you know, unless he wins the lottery, these players could be gone by the time that he gets his hands on them. So, you know, I think he's got the opportunity to try to pick up some pieces for his team, but again, I think the really key thing here is trying to find some takers for Taylor and Brown, because they're going to start declining while the rest of the team is still building. And that's fine if you're winning now, but since they're not, you don't want to hold on to win now players when your team is not winning now. Next up are the Houston Rockets. They're sitting at 19-19. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games. They're kind of right down the middle. The one thing they do well is they're good at assists. They're number two in the league, and they're number two overall in terms of overall percentage. They're also a good three-point shooting team, so you can probably guess this is a guard-heavy team. And they are getting excellent production from Otis Birdsong, and Larry Bird is a forward who plays a little bit like a guard. If I were trying to make a recommendation for them looking at their lineup, I think, you know, what would I try to do to alter things on the go forward? I think their weak link starting right now, and it's not that difficult to tell, is Clement Johnson, who's averaging 5 points in 30 minutes a night. That would be fine if Clement was a terrific rebounder, but he's only averaging 6 boards. So I think the right move here, for 78 is going to be eventually to see if he can push Larry Bird to the power forward slot and bring in someone a little more dynamic on the wing. Obviously, with Larry being 24, he has time to do that. Artis Gilmore should continue to be a solid center for at least a couple more seasons, but at 31, I'd be a little bit concerned about that. And, you know, Ron Boone being 34, he's already a bench player. I know he's got green potential. I don't know that he ever makes it there. I think he's probably going to start declining. Now, fortunately for 78, he's only playing him 10 minutes a game, which is probably fine. But I think I would have tried to feature him a little bit just to try to sell him off for parts. If you can get him playing, say, Henry Bibby's minutes, he's not going to make your team appreciably worse taking Bibby's minutes. But given, let's say, 25 minutes a game instead of 10 minutes a game, maybe he's averaging 12 points and somebody wants to give you a second round pick or some points for him. But absent that, I think Houston is going to be on the playoff bubble. I don't know that they make it in just because of all of the teams that are ahead of them. Could they make it? I wouldn't be surprised. Could they miss it? I also wouldn't be surprised. I think they'll be, you know, right there, and maybe they can pull off a trade for a win now piece that puts them over the hump. Their home record is looking good at 14-6. Their road's 5-13, so they're kind of split right as we expect teams would be, which is not surprising considering they're 500. Next up is the Denver Nuggets. They're 20-19, so a half game up on Houston. Their record at home is 15-3, which is really, really good. Their road record is a little bit less so at 5-16, although they're 8-2 over their last 10, and they're kind of finding their stride, I think, a little bit. Now, they are obviously led by Alex English with a little bit of Micah Corin there. English is averaging 32 points a game. I guess Bobby Jones at the power forward spot is doing good at 17, and as we've talked about before, there are not a lot of strong power forwards in the league. And so I think that gives a nice matchup help to Denver. Their centers, Mickey Johnson, he's probably not as good as some of the other centers. But because they've got an excellent power forward, I think they're able to offset that. If you look at how they're doing it, their passing is terrific. They're the top-rated passing team in the league, and that's probably helping improve their numbers a little bit. They're more or less middle of the road most everywhere else. They're a little above average in turnovers, but and their three-point percentage is a little bit lower than you'd like. You know, not quite middle of the pack, but with teams only making one or two three-pointers a game, I think three-point percentage is really something you probably don't care about yet. There's just not enough of them going on in a game to make a difference one way or the other. So what would my recommendation here be? I think this is a team that strikes a nice balance between winning in the medium term with most of their players at 27, 28. They probably got another couple good years in them. What I don't know is, since they're already mediocre, how do they break out of the pack and improve? I think this is a team that is like the Rockets, hanging around the fringes of the playoffs. If you ask me, will they make the playoffs? I think the answer is probably yes. Do they win a round in the playoffs? I think the answer is probably no, because teams will be able to scheme to slow down Alex English, and if they do that, it's going to be very difficult for the Nuggets to find the points they need to advance. I will say John Lucas is one of the players that I called out as being a little bit of a disappointment this season, at least in my opinion. He's only averaging 9 points a game. He is averaging 10 assists, which is helping prop up the assist totals. But what it's not translating to is it's not translating, at least in my eyes, to a great shooting percentage as a team. The team is 10th in the league in field goal percentage, which is, you know, right down the middle. So if you took Lucas out, you wonder how bad they would be. But it also means that Lucas's passing hasn't made them elite either. This is a team that they're probably a little farther along than the Jazz with Vandeweghe, but they look a lot like the Jazz. It's one player and not much else. And so, again, this is a team that, while they're seeing some success this year, they're not killing it. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see them becoming active near the trade deadline to try to flip one of their win-now pieces for something a little younger. Next up is San Antonio. They're currently 18-16. They're 12-6 at home, right on that 66% win percentage. They're 6-10 on the road, maybe slightly better than average. They're also on a three-game losing slide, and they're 5-5 in their last 10. And the way that they have been doing it, for the most part, is efficient offense and defense. They're number three in the league in both points per shot made and points per shot allowed. What the concern here for me would be is their rebounding differential is 20th in the league, and their turnover differential is only a minus one, meaning they're getting one more turnover from their opponents than they're creating, which is good for fourth in the league, but it's not a lot of extra possessions. And when their rebounding margin is minus 5.6, it means they're losing about four possessions to their opponents on average. And those four extra possessions probably correspond to 4 or 5 points. So if they could find a way to clean that up, they take their margin from 2.6 points per game to something like 7-8, which is really, really elite. The pleasant surprise on this team, I think, has to have been Calvin Natt. He's currently averaging 29.7 points a game, which is not bad for a player that was taken midway through round two of the creation draft. Kevin McHale, I want to spotlight him. That was their number one overall pick, is shooting 58%. Natt is shooting 56%. So they are getting a ton of production out of their bigs. Andrew Toney is doing a nice job at shooting guard, averaging 23 points a game on 48% shooting. So you can see where their efficiency comes from. They're taking high-quality shots. The problem is probably depth. When their starters come off the floor, they're really getting hammered. Obviously, Nat has the best plus-minus on the team at 6.4. But you look at their backup power forward to him, Ollie Johnson has a minus 1.3. Andrew Toney has a plus minus of 2.1. Sam Worthen, the backup, has a negative differential of 0.9. McHale, plus 1.1. His backup, Jawan Oldham, minus 0.9. So this is a team that I think has quality starters, and they're all pretty young, which is a good position for them to be in because you know, they're not going to be at the top of the draft. They're not going to be at the back of the draft either, which means they're going to have a chance to draft players that can fill out their bench. I think this is a team that might be able to win a round in the playoffs this year. I don't think they can win the whole thing. But I think I like what I see. I can see where they're going. They're going to be very good for quite some time. And where they're deficient is areas that you can be deficient in and improve in from the center of the pack. I know a lot of times people talk about being in purgatory where you're not good enough to get a top draft, or you're not good enough to win at all, but you're also not bad enough to get a top draft pick. I think they're okay because they have the top end talent. They just need to fill the back end and the bench and wait for their team to improve a little bit. I know they're only a half game ahead of Denver, but I like the way their team is put together. And I think they're going to be okay when it comes to playoff positioning. And finally, atop the Midwest Division, we have Dallas, who's sitting at 21-15. They're only two games up on San Antonio. But what Keep It 100 has done with his squad is he's assembled a squad that, if you look at the margins for points, they're number fifth in the league. Rebounds, they're third in the league. Assists, they're sixth in the league. Field goal percentage, they're fourth in the league. So it's a team that is very solid in all the big statistical categories. They could use some work in turnovers, in fouls, in steals, and in blocks, where they're in the bottom half of the league. But again, if you look at the margins there, you're plus five in rebounds, but in steals, you're only minus 0.4, and that nets to be a plus 4.7. So they're worrying about, I think, the right types of statistics to chase and building a team that performs well. Somebody else mentioned a chef's kiss to the combination of Gervin and Issel, and I have to agree with that. Between the two of them, they're averaging 60 points a game. So this is the team that is kind of built to win now. Their one young piece is Johnny Moore. But I think because they're built to win now, they're a team that can probably stand pat and move forward toward the end of the season, knowing that they'll probably have a good playoff seed. They may even win the division. I think a big trade coming out of San Antonio, Denver, or Houston could let them close the gap. But if I'm looking at how they're doing right now, I think Dallas has the inside track to win the division, not only because of their lead, but also because on the road they're 5-9, whereas everybody else is a little less accomplished on the road, except maybe San Antonio. So I think generally having a road record that's a little better than that 333 tells you that this is a team that has some staying power. We'll now move over to the Pacific Division. Starting now, this division has been war. It's fairly clumped. There's finally been a little bit of separation this sim, but it's certainly the tightest of the divisions from top to bottom. Right now at the bottom, you have the Lakers, who are 15-19, which is only four games off of 500. The one concern I have for the Lakers is their 7-10 home record. That needs to be better, but their road record is sterling at 8-9. They're nearly 500 on the road. So this is a team that I think has some potential going forward. Obviously, they're being led by Jamal Wilkes of World Be Free. I think those guys are doing a good job of pace setting. They're both in their prime, so this was a team that was kind of built to win now. It's maybe not coming together for them as much as they'd like, and if you look again at team trends, they're middle of the pack in terms of adjusted field goal percentage, but they're second to last in the league in terms of what they're allowing. If you look at their blocks, they're last in the league in terms of differential steals. They're bottom four. Turnovers, they're bottom five. So this is a team that I think is having more problems on the defensive end than the offensive end. So if I were if I were Lazy Titan Smash, I would definitely be looking to add some defense to my team, or possibly start getting some assets for the future, just because the division is so tough. Even if they're able to make a little bit of a run, it's not likely to net them a high playoff seed. And so the question then becomes, if you're a win now team and you're not winning now, what should you do? And I think the answer is try to re-scramble your assets. I don't think it's time to get rid of Wilkes and World Be Free. They're just too good. And I know he's had Mike Bratz on the block. He's shopping him around. We'll see what comes out of that. Like a lot of teams, definitely, I think they could use some help in the front court. And that seems to be a common thread with the teams that are struggling. They need help in the front court. So I wouldn't be surprised. They've been, again, as active as anybody I've seen on the trade block, looking around for something for Bratz. So they're trying to do something. And if there are no takers, you can't really fault them for that. Next up is the Commissioners, Seattle Supersonics. This is a team that's 16-19, and when you look at their home record of 14-5, you think, okay, that's pretty good. That's above average. But then you look at their road record of 2-14, and that's been this team's Achilles heel, that and Robert Parrish being injured. Now, Parrish is still out for another month, and because of that, I think this is another team, kind of like the Jazz with Vandeweghe, that just need to say, you know what, this isn't our year. Injuries are going to bite us. And at that point, once you've come to that conclusion, you ask yourself, okay, what assets do I have that I want to rearrange? And I think the answer is not very many. Most of their players are in their early 20s. So I think this is a team that probably stands pat with where they are, chalks this up. This season up to being lost due to injury, and maybe tries to figure out which players are worth keeping, which players are worth developing in the future. I think Norm Nixon has shown he's doing a decent job leading the team in Parrish's absence, so he's got his little big combination. I do think he would love to find a better scoring wing. And again, if we look at what the margins are for Seattle, their margins in rebounding, their bottom four in the league, margins in fouling, their bottom two in the league, points per shot, minus five in the league. So they're middle of the pack generally offensively. Defensively, it's just not there. And I think that's probably where Parrish comes back and helps. He'll give them points, he'll give them rebounding, he'll give them some defense. And so I think from there, that's one way in which this team can improve. But again, it's not something I think can happen in the short term. Next up is the San Diego Clippers. They're currently sitting at 18-18. They're 11-7 at home, 7-11 on the road. I think it's a little bit of fool's gold because their point differential is -1.1. And generally, point differential is one of the best indicators of what your final record is going to look like. So I think they probably finish, you know, a couple games under 500 on the season. But, you know, that being the case, I think, you know, they'll probably take it. Again, looking at the, you know, differentials for this team, they're pretty good in three-point shooting, but again, three-point shooting doesn't matter much in the current league. There's just not enough threes being taken. They're bottom three in blocked shots. But what I notice most of all about this team is they're almost right down the middle. They're, you know, 15, 12, 15, 12, 12, 14, 17, 13, 17, 15, 13 in just about every category. They're a completely average team, which would explain being 18 and 18, which means what they need to do is they need to figure out how to make a difference. And maybe that difference comes from hoping that they can get some more production out of Reggie Theus. He's injured now, but he only injured himself in the last sim of the previous sim, or the last game of the previous sim, excuse me. So he's only really missed one game. He's out for 6 days, so it's going to be a very short time for him to be down. I do think playing him at point guard has not done him any favors because he's being asked to run the offense. I think if his position was switched back up to the shooting guard spot, he might be able to be a little bit more productive. He'd lose some assists. But I think, you know, his field goal percentage, which is currently an amazing 54, might even tick up a little bit beyond that if you had somebody to get the ball to him and he didn't have to create absolutely everything himself. What do the Clippers do? You know, well, again, this is a team where, you know, their pieces range from 28 to 30 to 25 to Theus at 23. I think this is a team like Vandeweghe where, you look at this season, they're a completely average team. If you can make a move to acquire a player that makes you better, great. If not, I think you probably want to get some assets and try to get better in the future, because what I don't see in this team is a path to become significantly better in the future. I think Theus will get better, but I also think George McGinnis, who's their starting power forward, gets worse. I think Greg Ballard, who's their starting small forward, has underwhelmed for me. A blue player averaging 15 points a game. They need more production there. And Ballard is 25, so it's not like he's got lots and lots of years where he's going to be improving and improving ahead of him. You know, Ron Brewer, their starting shooting guard, also 25, also 15 points a game. It's a case of having players that aren't bad, but they're not great either. And so I don't know how Raby decides to fix that, but that would be my first order of business, is trying to get one more difference maker into the lineup. Either that or, you know, it's still early enough in the season. You probably can't catch, say, Philadelphia, Atlanta, and Utah, and Kansas City at the top of the draft board. But most of the teams that are around 500 could probably wind up with a, you know, 7, 8, 9 pick if they decided to sell off assets now. And I hate to couch it in those terms, but it's true. It's one of the trade-offs for deciding, you know what, I'm going to sell my win-now pieces. You do improve your own draft stock. It's just, you know, it is what it is. Next up is the Golden State Warriors. They're 23 and 16. That's a 60% winning percentage. They're only a game and a half out of the top of the division. They're 13 and 4 at home. They're 10 and 11 on the road, which is really, really good. And this is a team that Greipel has managed to build around Moses Malone. And honestly, I'm surprised at some of the production they're getting. You would think with Moses averaging almost 40 points, there wouldn't be enough shots for everyone else, but they've got Mike Mitchell averaging 19, they've got Mike Glenn averaging 14, Eddie Johnson averaging 15, and even James Bailey, their backup big man, is averaging 11. So this is a team that I think has done very, very well to be a pretty high-octane offense. Where they're falling short right now is their defense. They're number 4 overall in the league in terms of offense, but they're number 20 in terms of defense when you look at sheer points, which puts them smack in the middle of the pack at 13th overall. They're in the middle of the pack when it comes to rebounding. They're a little below the pack in assists. They're bad in steals, but they're excellent blocks. They're decent in turnovers. They're very good in fouls, and they're average everywhere else. So I think Moses' excellence has been what's carrying them, but I also think they're susceptible to a little bit of slide back. I think they've done really, really well on the road. But it will be interesting to see this coming sim. They've got, looks like, four games in a row on the road. They've got L.A., Philly, Kansas City, and Portland. Now, L.A., Philly, and Kansas City are all well below 500. Portland is not, although if you believe the power rankings that Angry Banana has been doing, they're in the bottom five of the league. So this is a chance for the Warriors to get above 500 on the road. And if they can do that, I think that's going to put them in very strong position to compete for the division. What I would be worried about if I'm the Warriors is if I lose, say, three out of four of those games, especially considering how some of those teams are in the bottom half of the league. At that point, I have to be worried whether or not I'm going to be able to sustain things across the finish line. But this is a team that is built very young. All of their core players are 25 or younger. They're going to get better. Malone will continue to be a monster. So if I was Greeple, I wouldn't be in a hurry to change anything. I think, you're always looking to improve your team, and maybe they can try to find a defensive guard to bring in, or maybe they just try to train some of their current players to be better defenders. But I don't see Golden State going anywhere. Next up, and this is a tie, I'm just going to do it in the way they're listed on the index page right now, are the Phoenix Suns at 24-13. They're 14-5 at home. They're 10-8 on the road. They're only one of three teams with a winning record on the road right now, the other two being Indiana and Cleveland. And as we know from previous podcasts, Indiana has just been kicking rear and taking names. The way Phoenix has been doing it is, I would say, looking at the margins, all around excellence. The one thing they're not great at is offensive rebounds. They're 17th in margin, but they're also number three overall in field goal percentage, meaning they're number one overall in their own field goal percentage. So they're not missing a lot of shots. It's okay not to get a lot of offensive rebounds because there are no missed shots to go grab. Everywhere else, they're above average. It's a team that is, I think, very interestingly built. I've mentioned before, I think the Bob McAdoo pickup was amazing. Magic Johnson and John Long are doing an incredible job on the wings. The one thing I think they could be worried about is their point guard, Tree Rollins, and has been fine as a defensive center. Kenny Higgs at the point is only averaging 5 points and five assists. That is not going to get it done. Makes me wonder if maybe they'd switch over to Chris Ford in the playoffs. But I think if I'm the Phoenix Suns, one of the things I would definitely be doing is I would be reaching out and inquiring after Mike Bratt, seeing if maybe I can get him for some pieces, because I think that would be an upgrade at point guard, which would be enough to break the virtual tie they've been in for the last three sims with the Portland blunt force trauma Blazers. And we'll talk about them very quickly. They're my team. I don't think people want to hear me talk a ton about them. They're kind of an interesting study in contrast. They're also 24-13, but if you look at their margins, they're number three overall in points. They're number one in rebounding, number one in fouls, number one in points per shot. But they're dead last in assists, dead last in steals, dead last in turnovers, bottom three in free throw percentage. So it's a team that does what it does very well and does everything else extraordinarily poorly. I don't think it's ridiculous to say I deliberately kind of built them that way. There were certain things I focused on to the detriment of other things. I'm not surprised they are performing the way they are in terms of being great in some areas and horrible in others. And so how do I fix that? I don't know. But this is a team that right now has two of their rotation pieces out. James Donaldson had a dislocated shoulder. He's out for a month. Jim Sponarkle, their backup guard, has a severe concussion, is out for 3 months. So if the blunt force trauma Blazers want to continue to compete for the division, they're going to have to make trades. The question is, do they have anything that they can give up that other teams want? I think, you know, I built the team with some very odd choices that I don't think a lot of people necessarily agreed with. It's probably why I'm so low in Angry Bananas power rankings, and that's fine. I think, like I said, it's going to be challenging for me to find things on my roster that fit other teams because that's just not how I built the roster. So if I can find something to get some help while Donaldson and Spanarkle are great, out, great. If not, I suspect the injuries are going to cause me to sink a little bit. That probably means Phoenix will win the Pacific. Might cause me even to drop below Golden State to third. I don't think we're in danger of missing the playoffs since we've got a pretty comfortable cushion for the playoff standings. But what it does mean is we're not going to run away with anything. If I was guessing, again, I think, you know, we have enough of a cushion to make the playoffs. It's, you know, five games. Donaldson will be back probably by the time that can be lost. Spanarkle, yeah, I mean, he's nice, but he's a backup. It's really the starters. But, you know, again, this is Indiana's title to lose, I think, at this point. They're continuing to be excellent all the way around, and I think that's something that we can expect to see more of from Pauly, and everybody else is going to have to figure out a way to beat them. One other thing, I guess, to touch on as we're wrapping things up here, is it will be interesting to see how people utilize training camps. We're a couple of sims away from the All-Star break. And one of the things I always think it's interesting to look at in early seasons is who is looking ahead, because there's not a training camp at the beginning of the season. Training camp is really the opportunity for players that can develop to catch up for playoff runs. But the other thing that I don't think is thought about and talked about a lot is training camp happens after the in-game training camp where potentials and ratings move happens. And so I've always felt the All-Star training camp is the opportunity to look ahead and do potential training for players who you'd like to see make a jump in the off-season. Because if you wait until the off-season training camp window to train potential, players' current ratings have already either made their jump or not. So you will either have to pay additional points to trade their currents or wait another season to get their potential training in. So it's just something to think about as you're looking over training. If you have players whose potentials you want to train and you want to see a bump in the coming off season, you need to do that now. However, not a lot of teams have a lot of points. I think everybody has the opportunity probably to raise one rating on one player by one band. And then, of course, we'll have all of the points for the season awards and standings and everything else coming into play. But at least to me, this is an interesting first season to see who will be using their training camps to try to get a head start on next season. I think the All-Star training camp has traditionally been the more underutilized of the two training periods, and I think that's something that probably ought to change as we go forward. So there you have it for me. I've reached the end of my rambling. I will make one final observation that something I've been playing with but haven't fully done yet. And this goes back to a comment that I made when I was talking about the blunt force trauma Blazers having schizophrenic, I guess I could call it, margins, where they're really good in some areas and really horrible in some others. One of the things I'm going to be interested in watching as we get to the end of the season is, A, how did creation draft order correlate to final finishes in the standings? And then two, as we look at the team leaders pages where we can see who's leading the league in points, who's leading the league in points allowed, who's leading the league in free throw percentage or offensive efficiency, which of these categories correlated with wins in this first season, which of them didn't? I can almost guarantee that three-point shooting has no correlation with wins just because there aren't enough of them to make it. In fact, I think it's kind of funny taking a look right now. The three-point percentage leaderboards, the number 23 team, so last place, is Indiana, who is far and away the best team in the league. So maybe there's even a negative correlation there. Who knows? That's something I want to, it's hard to get judgment early on in the season, but it will be interesting to see, right now, what is it that leads to winning? Is it three-pointers? Is it rebounding? Is it pace? Is it assists? And how that changes over time. So anybody that's good with numbers and wants to throw those things into a spreadsheet or something, there's something interesting. There's an article for you. If nobody else does it, I may do it, but I would certainly not begrudge anybody else for doing it. It saves me the work and gets you a few points for media articles and for giving us some analysis. The other thing I am probably going to do, just because I'm annoying that way, is I'm going to look at the total time you spent on the clock versus how you finished and see if there's any correlation there during the creation draft. I think the answer is going to be very little, but I do know the Pacers were very quick on the clock and they're very, very high percentage on wins. So who knows, maybe the longer you took, the worse you did, or you knew what you were doing, you picked fast like Polly and you did well, but I suspect it's going to be all over the place. So I don't think there's going to be a strong correlation. So with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up this episode of Chat with a Cat. If you have ideas for things you'd like me to look at or talk about next time, I'll definitely do that. Obviously, as we come up on the next podcast, the thing everybody's going to be talking about is the All-Star break and the trade deadline. I'll have to hope there are some trades to react to. There will definitely be All-Star results to react to. So we can look forward to that. And then the one after that is probably the playoff preview. But again, if you have topics you'd like to see covered, by all means, hit me up and, you can either put something in the threads. I do try to read them. Or you can shoot me a PM if you don't want to be public about it. So that's it. We'll wrap things up. And this concludes episode 4 of Chat with a Cat. Take care, everybody.